B-Cure Laser is now available in the UK. To get your very special offer right now, just call 0808 501 5122.
To the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Welcome back to the Good Grief Conversation. Today, we bring you part three of our series of When You Lose a Loved One. Now, if you would like to listen to the whole series together, then go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com and you'll find all the episodes when you sign up to the podcast extras. So take a look at that and you'll be able to hear all of them at the same time. So last week, we spoke to a funeral director from the Co-op Funeral Services, David Collingwood, and he shared with us the importance of, you know, getting the right person in this role and how they do way more than you could possibly imagine. So have a listen to that if you find yourself in that particular position. Now, this week, I'm talking to my friend Judith Wright, who became a celebrant by coincidence. But then there is no such thing as coincidence. And I heard a lovely quote just recently by Einstein, I believe, and he is known for saying that coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. And with those wise words, let me introduce you to Judith, and she can tell you her story of God's anonymity. Hi, Judith. Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation.
Good morning.
This is your first time here, and I'm sure there'll be other times because we've got a lot to talk about. So today is part, it's one of my series on losing a loved one, and you've become a celebrant just recently. Now, I know we go back a number of years, in fact, quite a number of years, and you've had a varied career. So let's talk a little bit about that. And then what was it that brought you to being a celebrant? And then we'll go deep as to what exactly a celebrant does and the valuable service that they offer to fire away.
Okay, so yeah, I suppose I have had, when I say a varied career, I guess I've worked always with people. And most recently, I've run a marketing agency for 18 years. Part of that work has involved me in delivering training and working with people to really listen to their story. And then to really articulate the story, to connect with their audience, to create sales. In its simplest form, that's what it does. So the work that I'm doing now, in some ways, although it seems like a really unlikely development, in some ways it's not really, because I've spent years listening to people's stories and then articulating that story. So in that sense, it's not so unusual, really. And I've done a lot of public speaking and delivering training, so it's not a challenge to stand up and speak in front of people. But I suppose how I came into it was by complete fluke. And it was really because one of my oldest friends, Carol, who we've been friends since we were seven, her dad died just over a year ago. And he had had dementia in recent years. And to be fair, I'd not really seen him in recent years. It was more as we were growing up as children that he was part of our lives, probably through to being in our early 20s. But when she asked me whether I would do a eulogy for the service, and I'd said that I would do that over the phone, but when I went in to see her, she asked me whether I would actually take the funeral service. And I have a bit of a motto in life, which is really that say yes and work out how to do it later. So she asked me to do more. I asked what that meant, and she said, would I take the service? So in line with my life's approach, I said, yes, I would. And then I was like, okay, so how do I actually do a funeral service? Anyway, do it I did. I spoke to various members of the family. I wrote a service for them. And when I'd done that, the funeral director that was working with the family asked me how long I'd been doing this. But she said, why have I never seen you? And I said, well, probably because this is the one and only service that I've ever done. So strange as it sounds, I was headhunted by a funeral director and asked whether I would do some services for her families. So in the end, I did say that I would. I said, you know, I'll do just a couple and we'll see how I feel and we'll see if it works for the family. And that's what I did. And she got some really, really good feedback. And I absolutely loved working with families. And that's how it started, really. So almost by default, from marketing consultant to creator of bespoke funeral services. What can I say?
I know. It's great, isn't it? You know, when opportunity just shows up and it matches your emotional self also, because you are a very compassionate woman. You have, you know, a lot of that to give as well. And I guess that forms a really big part of being a celebrant. It's not a regular day job, is it?
No, I don't think it is. If I'm honest, I don't think it would be for everybody. I'm not sure that it's the kind of work that everyone could do, if that makes sense. I think not just because of the physical skill set, but more the emotional skill set. You know, you can be in very upsetting and distressing, very emotional situations. And when you walk away, not everybody can walk away, if that makes sense. I think some people would find it too difficult to be exposed to that level of grief and be able to go back into your own world without it particularly having a huge effect on you. So I'm not sure it would be for everybody.
Yes, yeah. And how do you handle that as a celebrant? You know, I know you have had some very emotional circumstances. How do you do that? Because you're not made of stone, so.
No, absolutely not. For me personally, I've always been a person who deals in the here and now. So I remember somebody once asking me about my children and whether I got really worried about them and, you know, what if this happens and what if that happens? And I remember saying, actually, I don't do that. I don't worry about something that hasn't happened. I deal with whatever's real and what's happening now. And I think in some senses, that probably stands me in fairly good stead, because when I work with a family, I've got complete empathy and compassion and understanding for that family through my own grief journey, I suppose. So it isn't my family. And so whilst it touches you and you'd have a very stone heart not to be touched by some of the circumstances surrounding how people lose their loved ones, at the same time, it isn't mine. So I can be with them in the moment. You know, I remember coming out of one particular meeting and I knew it was going to be probably quite upsetting. It were quite a traumatic circumstances. I just sat and cried in the car. But then I went home. I didn't have to keep on living in that moment with them. Sometimes when you deliver a service, you actually feel very emotional because you're reliving the story of a loved one's life, and it's incredibly important to the people in the room. So it touches my emotions as well, but it touches it on their behalf because it triggers within me what brings that story to life, and that for that person. And I think probably my coping mechanism, and I don't even know whether I'd call it that, is that it's not about me, it's about them. This is nothing about me, it's all about them. And I do remember actually arriving at a service, and I'd had a really difficult occurrence had happened. And I was really upset. And I got there and I stood outside and I sort of took some deep breaths and just said, that has to be left on one side now, because I can't bring this to the party. I have to go to the party clean, because this is all about them and not about me. And I think that's probably how I do it, because it's all about them. It's never about me. If you bring yourself into it, you become very emotional.
And get too close as well, I guess, isn't it? And that's not what you're there to do.
No. And you can touch those emotions. I remember doing a eulogy going back maybe 5 years ago for a really good friend of mine who died. And I did the eulogy and I managed to do it. And then I got about 2/3 of the way through and I thought about myself within it, because obviously I wasn't really connected to this person. And then I couldn't speak because I let myself and my emotion in. So I think there's a kind of a fine line and a balancing difference between connecting with your emotions to use them to bring that service alive for somebody and actually letting yourself in and becoming emotionally involved.
Yeah, I think so. Because, you know, what you don't want from a celebrant is them falling apart. You have to be really strong, you know, when you're a funeral director, celebrants, as somebody on the other side, you become a leader, actually. The funeral directors and the celebrants are leaders of that event. And so I guess there's to be an emotional strength without being emotionally detached, would you say?
Yeah, because you do have to be connected. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't
work.
Have the emotion needed. And I think that's one of the things that is really important to families, that they feel that they've actually captured that essence of the person. And what they want is at the end of that service for everybody to be saying to them, you know, that was a beautiful service. It was exactly about how John, Fred, Betty, Barbara, whoever it was, it really captured that person. And that's what they want, because my role is about enabling them to create a service which really does justice to the person who they've lost, because it's incredibly important, because it's the final act they can actually do for that person. So they want to walk away feeling like that they gave that person the best send-off they possibly could.
Yeah, because you never get a chance to do it again.
No. And in order to do that, you know, it's quite an interesting one, isn't it? Because in order to capture somebody, you almost have to capture the good, the bad and the ugly. Because if a service was just about how wonderful somebody was and how sweet they were and how honest they were and how loving they were, and it probably, I'm not saying there isn't somebody out there who's 100% perfect, but it probably wouldn't really capture them, because that person might have had a real miserly temperament, or they might have had a wicked sense of humour. They might have had some real antics that they've got up to that everybody knew about that didn't talk about, or escapades they've had, or whatever it is. But that all needs to come in as well, because that's embracing the whole person. And I know that when I work with families who are happy to share that level of information from the point of view of feedback, if you like, it's those services where you hear everybody going, oh, that's just how they were. That was so good. That really made me smile. That really made me think about, et cetera, et cetera. Because in remembering somebody's life, you know, if you only remember a portion of the life, it's not really a true reflection of the person.
No, and we are who we are, warts and all, aren't we? And it's important to embrace that and not try to be perfect. Do your best as a human being, but embrace exactly who you are. And lovely that that whole story can be told. So how does somebody then choose the right celebrant? Now, I'm not saying the best celebrant, I'm saying the right one. What do you think is involved in that? Is there a little bit of telepathy? Is it down to how you market? Or, you know, because at the time when that decision has to be made, your head and your heart are just not where they normally are. I mean, I didn't have a celebrant. We went down the church service and then onto the crematorium. But I don't know what I would have done or how I would have chosen. So what do people do, you know, when they're in that situation?
Yeah, I think in the main, I personally have not particularly, interesting given that I've got a marketing background, have not particularly marketed my services because I've worked with a particular funeral director. So I think how it normally works is that when somebody has lost somebody, they instruct a company to support them during that time, just as you did, just as most people do. And I think it's often at the discretion of the funeral director. So the funeral director will find out whether they would like a religious person involved, whether they want a non-religious person. And then I think the art of part of the role of a funeral director then is matching the family to the people who they have available to do that. I personally have never been asked to do a service and then met with somebody and not done the service. But I think that can happen if they're not matched. Somebody might say, actually, it doesn't feel right, and that's absolutely fine. It has to be a perfect fit at that time. So I think often it's down to that. I've done one recently where they asked for me specifically because they'd been to a friend's service that I'd taken, and a particular lady had said, if anything happens to me in the future, I want that person to take my service. As with any business, word of mouth is a big thing because it is about being the right fit for somebody. So I've sort of done somebody's service and then later, you know, I might have done a mum's service. And then later, maybe the dad's died, and or as another one recently where I'd done the mum's service and then actually her husband died quite unexpectedly. And she'd remembered that she'd had a good feeling from what had been done. So she asked me to do her husband's funeral. So I think once people have experienced you, if it felt right, then I think you get asked. But other than that, I think it is generally down to the funeral directors to match the families.
Yeah. And I think that whole industry actually is very much an emotional and intuitive industry. Your feelings are so raw that it's the feelings that guide the decisions, really, isn't it? You know, I remember looking for venues for Murray's celebration, and we went to several, and I walked into it was a golf club, as you know, and as soon as I walked in, I knew it. It's like that I had such a strong feeling that this was the right place. And I don't know that there are too many events that, well, maybe there are, but I think we're so in tune with our emotions and our feelings at that moment in our life. Whereas at other times, though you are making these same decisions, a lot of the time we're living in our head. So the head is also making the decision. But at that time, it's largely driven by emotion, I would have thought.
I think so, but that's one of the things that you have to be able to deal with, because people deal with grief in a myriad of ways. And so some people do move into that almost primal emotional state. And I think that is very intuitive in terms of, you've just expressed walking in and knowing that that was the place you wanted to hold Murray's celebration. But that can go right through to the other extreme, where you have people who are completely numb and they can't talk and they can't express what they're thinking and articulate what they would normally do. And so that can be quite challenging in my role, because what I don't want to do is take a funeral service and know nothing about the person who's been lost. And often, you know, because you're dealing with very close family members, if those people have gone into overwhelm and are not able to articulate anything, then you've got to be quite creative about how you create a service with essentially not any information.
I had a great benefit because it was a number of weeks after Murray's passing. Well, I suppose it would have been just over 2 weeks. If I'd have had to make those decisions in the first week, I'd have been that numb customer family. No, my mouth wouldn't have worked. I couldn't have thought about it because you got to adjust before being able to make this. So at the time, it seemed like it's the longest time to wait. But I think it served us well, all that waiting, and allowed us to be able to make those, you know, really important decisions, because we wanted to celebrate him and, you know, give him the best farewell, you know. And I think you have to be able to think in order to do that. And when it's a traumatic loss, when it's a big surprise, I think that's when you get the numbness going on. Whereas, you know, when you know somebody's been sick and they're older, you still don't like it, but there is an acceptance in the very early stages. And so you can handle things differently, I reckon. It's just from my experience.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But like you say, everyone is so different.
They are. And I think one of the things that I've thought for a long time, I suppose through my own experiences, is that, you know, when somebody loses somebody, I just think that you need to give a couple of years where whatever they say, what behaviours they display, you just forgive them everything, because people say and do the strangest things in grief and quite out of character things sometimes. But it is a cycle, isn't it? And it's a never-ending cycle. I'm not saying that I think it ends, but, you know, it's firsts of everything for a long time when we've lost somebody. And so therefore, how we behave and how we act is impacted by losing somebody for a number of years, because there are so many firsts. You know, Christmases and birthdays are one thing, aren't they? But there are lots of other things. The family reunion, you know, whatever it is, births, christenings, weddings, where that person isn't there. And so therefore, for other people who've lost somebody attending, it isn't the same as it would have been. So it takes a long, long time.
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, just talking about the Christmas, and, you know, we've got our second Christmas coming up. And I'll be honest, I've got a feeling this might be worse than the last Christmas, you know, his first Christmas. There's something about the firsts. They are hard, but you have to dig deep in bravery. But the second time round, you just say, oh, my God, this is actually reality, you know. So there's a different perspective. And somebody once said to me quite early on, the second Christmas is worse than the first. And I'm like, well, I don't know that at that stage, but I can already feel the weight of Christmas is coming. Whereas I think last Christmas, I was like, no, I've got to be strong for my other children and I'll bring Christmas off. There was almost like this march into battle kind of leadership approach to it.
Yeah. I have to do it. I have three children.
Exactly. All of that. And I think also with COVID and everything that's taken the stuffing out of everybody, you know, so there's even that on top of it this year. And you're just like, oh, my goodness, you just got to keep on sailing through the mire, as they say. But Judith, I think now let's go on to this other project that you've done, because what's come out of you being the celebrant, it's really made you look at life, hasn't it? And to really go deeper as to what life is about. And as I say to many people, acknowledging that life does come to an end. And when we acknowledge that, then we live better and we live with more clarity and more commitment to living, I think, rather than the state of fear and hiding away and wasting your days. So just tell us the projects that you've gone on to. You've written a very special book. So tell me about that one.
Yeah, so I think I lost my mum and my nephew and my sister and a really good friend in a relatively short period of time. And one of the things that I realised is that once you've said goodbye to somebody, you can never ask them any more questions. And there are many things that over time, and again, this is as we talked about, you know, sometimes gets harder as time goes by, because you realise the things you might have asked that you didn't ask. From that personal experience, I realised that we don't know as much about people as it would be good to do. My daughter had said to me one day, what's your favourite colour? And I was like, well, so-and-so. And then she said, what's Dad's favourite colour? And I went, no idea. And she said, are you joking? You don't even know what his favourite colour is? And I'm like, no, I don't actually. And that kind of level of questioning and thinking, since I've been doing this role for probably 15 months or more now, I've realised that even with the people who we're really close to, we often don't know things about them that becomes apparent very quickly. Even down to, you know, the kinds of music people like, and we just don't always seem to have the conversations that mean we hold the information about the other person. And that set me off thinking, really. And the company that I run now is called Essence of You. And that was really around brand and developing brands for people and getting them to connect with their audience. And when I started doing this work, I was like, oh, Essence of You, that's brilliant, because that's what I want to do. I want to capture the essence of you as a person in the services that I create. So I then went on to thinking, well, actually, how great would it be to capture the essence of a person through capturing the story of their life? And so that's what I've actually done. I've written a book, which is really probably more of a journal because obviously it requires filling in. And I've done that because I wanted people to be able to capture the story of my life about all different things. There's all kinds of different questions in there and spaces for people to record memories. And I just thought it'd be a great legacy piece to be able to pass to your children, to your family, so that over the years they can look at that and actually have an essence of who you were and what you liked and what you've done in your life, what made you tick, you know, what made you get out of bed in the morning, what used to really tick you off, you know, that kind of level of understanding and knowing someday, but often too late for us to ask that question. So that's what I've done, really. It's gone in production. I should be getting my first drafts of some of the illustrated pages this next week. So I'm really excited. But then during the process of doing that, I thought, actually, the other thing that people really struggle with, and I've seen it on so many occasions, is how to actually celebrate somebody's life. You know, how would I want my life to be celebrated when I've gone on to my next great journey? How would I want people to be celebrating my life? So I am actually about to start another book, which will be about the celebration of my life, which will be for people to be able to leave behind. So people will know exactly how it wants to be celebrated and remembered, because it's really traumatic. It's really traumatic when we don't know what somebody wants. And I did have personal experience of that when my own father died, and I knew that he wanted burying, but nobody else in my family knew that he did. And it was really difficult because we couldn't find the grave papers. Nobody actually, I don't think, really believed me initially that he wanted burying. It was quite traumatic at the time. So these books are going to be great ways of helping the people who are left behind to know you, to celebrate with you. Great for family members with dementia, so you can relive the stories of their life with them. But all really written and born out of this experience of creating bespoke services and working with some wonderful families. So I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, that, you know, you were just opened up to that journey. And then more things have come from it that are really useful. I mean, as you were sharing that story there, I was thinking of my mum. And my mum, you know, has some great stories. She had to leave school at the age of 12. She went to work in a factory and all this. And we've heard them briefly, you know, over our lifetime with mum. But suddenly it's like, oh, the factory story again. But then we didn't ask the right questions. We didn't dig deep on mum's story. And now we can't get those stories. I mean, I must admit, she had a lovely Bolton accent, sounded like Peter Kay. And I wish we had recordings of her, you know. I mean, we do have a few like on video recordings, but just recordings of her telling those stories. But it's a great opportunity for older people to be heard, I think, as much as anything, to be given the time, sit down, write your stories. It's like saying, now I want to know you. I know you've been my mum all these years, and we all take our mum granted. But now you're going, this is now the space. I now want to get to know you as the woman or as the man, if it's your dad. So I think it's a beautiful thing. And then to go on to the celebration one, well, in the show next week, we're talking about ways to celebrate, so commemorative things that you can do, from having your ashes pressed into vinyl with your favourite song or the words of your voice, to having your ashes scattered up in space and, you know, ashes into diamonds. And there's so many things that you can do that are a real celebration of someone's life. Because I do think that's what we must remember, that all of this wrapping up someone's life is a celebration of their lives. You know, even if they've been mischievous and caused trouble, they came to this earth to have that experience, you know, and it's about wrapping that up and putting the final full stop in place. You know, I mean, I've already told my kids, you know, I want a disco. There has to be 80s music. You know, this is my final dance. And so they know that. I like disco balls the lot, you know. Don't spare the expense on my glass disco balls. I'm quite open, but I always have been open to the kids about funerals and celebration of life. Quite ironic, really, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing as sure in life as death, is there? And yet, often for a lot of people is quite a taboo subject, and it's that taboo that makes it really hard for the people that are left behind. So, you know, I know that people talk about having wills and you should have a will, and yes, you absolutely should, otherwise chaos reigns after you've gone and people don't know what you actually wanted. So if I think any way that helps us to remember the special people in our lives and to be able to celebrate that life in the way that they would have really wanted it to be done, then it can only be helpful, can't it?
It can only be helpful. And like you said, a time with the loved ones, that's a tough time. Even if you know that someone's life's coming to an end, it's still a shock when it actually does. And so, yeah, to have that in place and to know. I always remember with my mom, I mean, it was a pure fluke, really. You know, deciding what to dress somebody in, you know, their final outfit. And my mum was a great joker, and she used to wear like fancy dress stuff just to make us all laugh. You know, she was a great woman. And so it's like, oh my God, what are we going to dress her in? And I was like, oh, well, maybe that elf outfit then, you know. And so we were sort of going along mum's humorous side. And then one night I was in my mum's bedroom. I was on my own in the house and I was clearing up. And my sister, my big sister, she said, oh, there's the bag in mum's bedroom that she had in the hospital. If you want to go through that and clear it out, you're welcome to do that. And I was thinking, oh, blimey, you know, all on my own, my mum's last items. But then I decided to be brave and I would do that. So I pull all these things out and I find this little purse, you know, imagine old woman's purse with a little clipping clasp on the top. And for some reason, and I actually think my mum guided me with this, for some bizarre reason, I turned the purse upside down and there was a hidden zip pocket on the underneath of the purse. I open it up and inside is a tiny piece of paper that mum had scribbled her last wishes on, basically. And she'd written the outfit that she wanted to be buried in. I'm like, oh my goodness, you nearly got the elf when you wanted your blue suit. So, you know, but that was a complete fluke that actually happened with you. And also with what I'm doing on the Good Grief Conversation, we're encouraging people to start to think about the inevitable thing that's going to happen. And that when you live in this space, it does make you live better. You live with greater clarity. And I think that's what your books, both of them, absolutely do. You know, you're not living in denial of this happening. You're saying, look, I know this is going to happen. Let's make it the best that we can. And here's what I want. And this was my life. And, you know, I think it's just brilliant. Brilliant. Lovely, Judith. Thank you so much for joining me today. So where can people find out about your books, though?
So I have a website, which is judithwright.co.uk. So they will be going on there.
And that's Wright with a W.
It is, yes. Judith, W-R-I-G-H-T. They can find me on Instagram, Essence of You, J-W. And they can find me on my Facebook page, which is Essence of You.
Awesome. And we'll no doubt put some links and things on the Good Grief Conversation website when they're all out and available. I'll definitely be supporting you.
Thank you. The first book should be available for Christmas. So that'd be nice.
Superb. Judy, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with all that. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, there you go. It's funny, isn't it, how we get to do the things that we do and how so many things seem to end up, you know, that we're led down a path. And when that path feels right, then we take it. And before you know it, you're offering a service that really helps other people. So if you would like details of Judith's service and to learn more about her books when they're available, then go to judithwright.co.uk. And that is Wright with a W. Also, if you would like to find out about her pre-launch and get a taster for a section of her book, then Judith has given us a PDF of a sample from her book for you listeners. And those are available over in the podcast extras, which by now, maybe you already know. You just go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com and sign up for podcast extras. Scroll down to today's show and you will find Judith's sample of her book, and you'll also be able to find links to purchasing her book too. These are, you know, such a great gift for people, and I can just imagine how vital they will be amongst families, because, you know, no one gets out of here alive, as they say, and we might as well start the celebration straight away. I think they're just such brilliant ideas. So yeah, sign up to the podcast extras or head over to Judith's website. Now, next week, I have three guest speakers about creative and inspiring ways to commemorate our loved ones. So tune into that. I find them really exciting, and I just think it is all part of the celebration before the inevitable happens. You know, let's think about it, and it's not so bad. In fact, when you think about it, you do actually live more. So that's what's happening on next week's show. I think I've got Jason from And Vinyl-y, so you get to put your ashes into a vinyl. You can send them up into space. You can make diamonds. There's so many things you can do with your loved ones. So do join me for that show. Yeah, so I look forward to bringing that to you. And always remember, you know, if you want to get in touch or if you've got any ideas or any questions, then do send me an email at janet@thegoodgriefconversation.com. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.